Hello, this is Carol Barks with Before It Begins. Today on the show, we will be discussing mediation. While mediation has been used for centuries, many people still aren't really sure what mediation is and when and how they might access this resource. So today we'll be diving into those very topics. What is mediation? How do you use it? When would you use it? And finally, how do you pick a really good mediator that's perfect for what you're trying to get accomplished? So when we talk about mediation, it really is a very simple process of using a neutral third party to help other parties. It might just be two, but it could be more than two. Maybe it's a family, for instance, resolve their issues. They might be conflicts. They might be facilitations for a business plan or how we're going to move forward for any given topic. And maybe those conversations haven't been going so well one-on-one, or maybe they haven't happened at all because people are conflict adverse and they're not talking to each other. So you can bring in a mediator who does not have any person that they're aiming to try to please or get their point accomplished. Instead, they are just facilitating a conversation for everyone so that they can find a way through the discussion in a peaceful manner. This is oftentimes done through the legal system by way of helping people resolve cases without a judge having to decide. But many times people also use mediation before they go to court, or even with something that has nothing to do with court, with just the need to help people be heard. And the wonderful thing about using a mediator is that when you use somebody who mediates problems all the time, they tend to have a lot of ideas for how you can resolve those differences and how you can negotiate situations in a way that help everybody come up with solutions that are a little bit different than I get my way or you get your way. And with that in mind, it makes it like you have an ally in this process. Even though they're not working for you specifically, they are working for a peaceful resolution. And anytime I've ever talked to anyone, nobody's really interested in having a conflict. Nobody puts that on their to-do list. Like, today I'm going to look for a fight. We have so many different things in life that we would like to do more, that I think getting conflicts behind us as quickly as possible is always a great idea, because there's so many more beautiful things to tackle in the world. So with mediation, instead of litigation, you have the ability to keep the power. It is all about self-determination. So if you were going to go to court, a judge is going to decide what happens for you. And you tend to think, or parties tend to think, that I'm going to win. I know I'm going to win, but you might not present all your evidence in the way that a judge needs to hear it. Or a judge may see the law as differently than you do. Or maybe there's a jury and the jury just finds you fairly unlikable as a person. And that all becomes really problematic. So instead, with mediation, you get to keep control of the concessions that you make, and you get to find the way out in a way that makes you feel satisfied with what you're agreeing upon. You also have many more choices available to you than what a judge might have. A judge has to really look at the evidence and decide if somebody's guilty or innocent, or if the law's been proven or not. In mediation, you can come up with all sorts of nuances that a judge just does not have available to them. So it gives you so much more creativity for your solution in there. And it really is probably the only way, other than a one-on-one conversation, to prove the principle of the matter. So at this point, I've facilitated or overseen more than 14,000 mediations. Many times I hear people say it's really not about the issue that they put on the table for wanting to have resolved. They'll tell me instead it's about the principle of the matter. It's about their perception of fairness that hasn't happened. And I will tell you that mediation is probably that only way you can prove that, because if I go to a judge and the judge rules that the other person is the one who's in the right, then I've just lost the whole point of trying to prove what I was trying to prove. Or a judge just might rule, but really not give any commentary on it. And that tends to be fairly unsatisfying to people as well. But if I get you to make some sort of concession because of the things that I've said to you in a mediation, then I've proved my principle. I've gotten you to hear me, and I've gotten you to agree to something because of our conversation. The other thing that's really great about mediation is it puts an end to the issue that you have in theory. So if you were to go to court and you and I were going back and forth and you won and I didn't like that, I could appeal and it would go to the next higher court. And then maybe I win this time and you could appeal. So we could keep doing this until we go up to the Supreme Court level. And there really isn't necessarily closure in there. And things get very expensive every time we're going up and up within the legal system. However, when we have an agreement in mediation, it's done and it's written and it's agreed to and it's signed off on. And that is so impactful for people that there's some pretty cool court statistics that when I was running Idaho's largest mediation program, the statistics were really, really compelling. So for instance, if you had an agreement in mediation, the likelihood that you would see whatever you agreed upon come to fruition was 93%. So that's pretty good, right? That's a good solid A. If you were to get a judgment by the judge, our research showed us that compliance with those orders was only 37%. So there's a big difference when people get some ability to lean into what it is that they're agreeing upon, they're far more likely to follow through with the nuances of that. Now, some people will ask me, what about if this isn't a court case? Is there any theme that holds somebody to adhering to this or to something upon which we agreed? And typically, yes, oftentimes it becomes a contract because people are signing what this mediator statement is as to the terms of whatever it is that they agreed upon. So even if somebody didn't comply with it, that does become a document you could take to court to show that you had an agreement about terms of whatever it was you were reaching. And it also, if it has nothing to do with court, again, say it's a family matter or just a business strategy, it also gives you the nuances in a document that, remember, this is what we agreed we were going to do. This is what we agreed we were going to follow. So it helps get rid of any of those ambiguities that might take place in just a random conversation or talk. So it's really a fabulous tool, again, with so much for it and not so much why you wouldn't want to use it. Now, really, I'm wondering, like, what would you do? How do you find a mediator? So, yep, I'm convinced I do have an issue. Carol, what do I do now? How do I find somebody? Well, it's so much easier than it used to be because post-COVID, we maybe needed to find somebody who was a mediator in our area. But now we can find people all over the world who can mediate for us. So now it's really looking for those nuances of what I would say are a fit. And one of the first things that people will ask is just the very simple question of, I'm looking for a mediator. What do you charge? And I will tell you that that's a two-part answer. You will find a variety of ranges of what mediators charge. And you also want to pay attention to a secondary question if you're going to ask that question, which is, how long do mediators typically take to resolve the situations that you're seeking a mediator for? Sometimes a mediator might be really inexpensive, but they take hours and hours and hours and hours to get something resolved. So when you look at the cost at the end of time, you might have been better off using a mediator who charges more, but is more effective with their use of time. So ask that question in parts. The next thing people oftentimes wonder about is your expertise. And many times that expertise is put into three different categories. Mediators oftentimes are judges or retired judges. They often are attorneys. And then there's just as many, if not more, that are non-attorneys. Common sense might tell you that the best mediator might be a judge, but, and then maybe the second best would be an attorney, and then maybe somebody who doesn't know anything about legal processes or helping people decide might be the last. And that's actually not the case, as it turns out. So again, looking at the statistics that we ran when I was doing the court mediation program, we found that, ironically, the judges had the lowest resolution rates. The next were attorneys, and the best resolution rates were from non-attorney people. You might find it also interesting that one of the top negotiators or mediators in the field is William Ury. He wrote the book Getting to Yes, which is one of the top negotiation books in the world. His background is he's an anthropologist. So when you think about why that might be, it becomes obvious in retrospect. So judges aren't necessarily trained to help people communicate. They're trained to decide who wins and who loses, who they believe over somebody else. And their brains develop pathways for viewing things in that same light. So unless they have some very specific training or background that's communication based, they might not really know how to help people hear each other during these sometimes difficult and tense conversations. Likewise, attorneys are oftentimes trained to decide the legal aspects of a case, and they're only arguing for their client typically. So they're not used to, again, facilitating conversations. They're used to managing one side of a discussion. That can make it challenging for them because they can get into the trap of viewing everything based on the law. But in reality, there's so many other ways that you can decide things. Like, I might know that I have the law on my side, but I might be looking for a resolution that's different than everything I could get in court because I'm looking for resolution. I'm looking for a way to collaborate. And so that law maybe falls by the wayside. That would be something we would argue in court, not necessarily in mediation. Then when we're looking at people who are non-attorney mediators, they might be counselors, they might be anthropologists, they might be teachers, they might be social workers, they might be business people. And we find that they oftentimes have much stronger skill sets for managing conversations and really helping people be heard. So active listening is a huge part of mediation, not only for the participants, but for the mediator. So is that mediator really able to hear what people are saying and really able to take that down to get to the root of the matter, to really get beyond not just what people are saying, but what it is that really is driving their need for what they're asking? And that's what I'm really concerned about. So another thing along that line is, does the mediator need to know specifically about the content that we're bringing them in to mediate? So at this point in time, I've mediated everything from criminal cases with people who are on death row to homeowner and landlord cases to all sorts of business cases and med mal cases and insurance cases, and then all the way down to family law and child custody cases and everything in between. They all have their own nuances, and it doesn't hurt to know the language that goes on with each of those things. But when I'm dealing with mediations that have attorneys, I don't have to know the law. They do. What I need to know is how to help people move the conversation forward. And sometimes there can be great value in asking what we might call that stupid question, because it can make people pause and think about something from a perspective other than the one that they have been approaching a situation with. So what you're really looking for is someone, in my mind, that is very passionate about their work. It's not just a job. It's not just something I'm going to do because I'm tired of practicing law or I'm retired and I'm just looking for some extra income. I want you to look for somebody who really wants to have the best happen for you and the other party or parties. And that is even more important than years mediating. or how many cases that you mediated. So I've told you I've mediated more than 14,000 or overseen them. That's a lot. But if I had bad practices, that might mean that I really did a bad job 14,000 times. It doesn't guarantee that you're getting a good product. Likewise, I could have been mediating for 30 years. I haven't, but I could have been. And I could still be terrible. So if I haven't kept up with the latest research and the latest science and continued to learn how to really listen and communicate, I might not be providing a great service. So what I really would urge you to consider are some things that we do know tend to make stronger mediators. So for instance, one of the things I want to know is if somebody has a wide variety of background, they tend to be more creative. Sometimes we know that from doing research, we were wondering, are there cases where it's better to have a man or a woman mediator? And we found that there were really only two differences in that regard, and they came down as very stereotypical. But we found that if you were doing an automobile type negotiation, then yes, it was of an advantage to have a male mediator. And if you were doing a family law case, a female mediator was shown to have improved resolution rates in there. And so otherwise, it was really across the board that we're looking for just the person who wants to resolve conflicts. So that might be where you ask your mediators that you're researching what their processes are. Many times I've overseen mediators who have come back and told me about a case, and they come back relatively quickly. And they said, well, the party just said that they didn't want to mediate. And so I said, okay, then you'll go see the judge on such and such a date. Well, that's really quitting. To me, no is just the beginning. So I'm in there to help you find this. And when things get tense and when people think that they can't get beyond an impasse, maybe that's when I pause. Maybe that's when I take breaks. Maybe that's when I give my clients a little bit of homework. Maybe we wait for another day and come back and tackle this. But that doesn't mean that it's just over. So I want somebody who isn't just so busy and is just like, okay, whatever, I'll just take the next case. I care about my clients. If they've spent the money to come to mediation and they've spent the time and the discomfort to get there, I want them to be successful. Now, that said, I don't want somebody who has 100% resolution rate, because that means that they're probably strong-arming people into a resolution. And there are cases that shouldn't be resolved. There's cases that maybe a judge needs to decide for various purposes. So really explore that with the mediators that you're interviewing as well. And when we think about what their processes are, I also want you to ask them how they do a session. So our brains, as I've mentioned in other podcasts, are really hungry. So 3 pounds of our body weight, but they use about 25% of the energy that we have every day. So there are outdated mediation processes where you're going to come in at 9 o'clock in the morning or 8 o'clock in the morning, and we're not going to end until midnight, if that's what it takes. And you may or may not get a lunch break, and you may or may not have snacks. And really what happens by the end of that time is you're just worn down. And we find that people end up just agreeing because they're just tired of fighting anymore, and they just don't have the bandwidth to really process anything. We find that those agreements are oftentimes agreements that people regret later, because maybe they left money on the table, or maybe they didn't really advocate for something because they just forgot, or they just were tired of going the rounds and the rounds and the rounds. So find out how people manage that. I also want you to ask another process question is, do they keep everybody in the same room, or do they do what's called shuttle mediation, which is that they are in different rooms from each other? I really do not like shuttle mediation. I know that we use it for certain types of mediation that are very traditional, like maybe med-mal cases or insurance cases. But even then, I like to keep parties in the same room where those parties get a chance to have breaks and maybe talk with their legal counsel, but that they come back together to keep working on it. Because again, the whole spirit of mediation is that it's parties working together to resolve differences. And if we're not in the same room, then it's the mediator who's doing this shuttle game of telephone. And if you've ever played that game, you know that the message doesn't always get conveyed correctly to the party on the other side. Instead, what I remember gets conveyed, or maybe what I think is important gets conveyed, but maybe I leave off some of the nuances. Maybe I get it exactly right, but you don't actually see the expression on the other person's face. So you can't tell if that person is making their last and final offer or if they're just negotiating and they still have lots of different rounds. That is something that you only see when you're in the room and you're watching all of the communication styles. So remember the words that somebody says. So the words that the mediator is delivering is roughly 7 to 30% of the whole process. The rest is if somebody's going, yeah, I'm done with this. You can go tell them this, but I'm done. Well, I might believe that, right? Versus, yeah, go tell them this and then we'll see what they do. Those are two different things. One tells me the person is done. The other tells me that the person is still trying to game the process and see what they can get out of it. That I think you're better off knowing in person rather than having just a message delivered back to you or an opinion from the mediator. That opinion might be correct, but it could also be incorrect. Another thing that you would want to pay attention to is, do mediators require what's called a pre-mediation statement? And a pre-mediation statement is essentially a legal process more than an informal one. But if it's an informal mediation, some mediators will still require them. And it's essentially a statement about your side of the situation. And the other party gets to do the same thing as well. Well, historically, what happens is maybe one party gives a paragraph and the other party gives 10 pages. And what that does, whether it's little or whether it's big, is it starts giving the mediator an overview of what they're mediating. And unfortunately, that overview creates a natural bias in their brains, whether they know it or not. So mediators start thinking about who's right and who's wrong, or who is the person who's more reasonable to deal with, or who sounds more ornery. And they're also starting to think about their questions and how they're going to run the process. But guess what? It's not my process as a mediator. It's your process as the attendee. So I like to know a little bit about what we're mediating. So if there's anything I need to learn about just in theory, so I have some good opening type questions to ask, that can be helpful. But I don't want to know about the case in substance. I want to give you the chance to tell me about that in person. And I want to be able to ask you exploratory, curious questions that really dive down into what it is that are the fundamental issues that are facing all the parties that I'm trying to help. So I would urge you to avoid getting stuck in that process, because it can just set things back and have the mediator stay in their own mind versus in your mind, which is where we want people to be. We want people to be able to be seen and heard and understood. That's so much more important. So you want people who can be present with you in there. And with that, I want to also recommend, because it's my preference, that people are brain-based as well. So the more that your mediator understands the brain and understands how people react under stressful circumstances and can really see the things that happen when people are getting triggered and can actually speak to the elephant in the room and say, hey, I can see that response was something that didn't sit well with you. Can we explore that so we can have a more meaningful conversation? Those types of things are great rather than somebody who's just barreling through a process and following steps without following nuances. So ask those questions, do research, Google people's names when you find somebody that somebody says this is a great mediator, and then also think about what it is that you're trying to get done. So sometimes mediations are transformative. So we're working on restoring relationships with people who are trying to do better together in the future. Sometimes they're transactional. They're really just a one and done. They're more business-like, and they might be more legally nuanced. That might be where you will benefit from having a judge or an attorney who can give some thoughts and feedback about their perceptions. But remember that they're just perceptions. So just because somebody says something doesn't mean that it's true, doesn't mean that that's how it's going to play out. There are so many uncertainties that those are just thoughts, not realities. So these techniques that I want you to consider what I want is for you to lean in to mediation and the idea of utilizing it. Sometimes maybe it's just a friend who could be a neutral person or a colleague that could be a neutral person, but sometimes it could be a mediator such as myself. And if you ever have questions, feel free to reach out to me, whether I'm in your area or in that area of expertise you're looking for a mediator, I can still give you feedback. So I hope that it's been valuable in teaching you to really understand the whens and the hows and the whys of mediation, as well as giving you a little bit of a deeper dive into how you select somebody. It's not as simple as just finding somebody with the name and then saying, perfect, you're hired. So if you want more information, reach out to me at carol@carolbarks.com or look us up at the Neuromediation Group. I am always happy to have a conversation. And if you like this podcast, please share it with others and please consider liking the podcast. And until next time, I'm Carol Barks with Before It Begins.